The Community Character Hour is brought to you in part by the generous support of Lori Goetz and Clem Yonker. Thanks to Lori, Clem, and all of you for supporting community radio in North Idaho. Good morning. You've tuned into the Community Character Hour here on 88.5 KRFY. And I'm Jack Peterson. I'm here with Hannah Combs, and usually we start off this program with a reading from a newspaper article from the past. What have we got today, Hannah?
Well, today everything we're sharing comes from the newspapers. We're doing sort of a news of Christmas's past, and we're going to start all the way back in 1905, and then up through 1975, we're going to hear the nicest and naughtiest news of each decade.
Perfect. A nice list and a naughty list. This will be fun. And let me introduce you properly. Hannah Combs is the executive director of the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. And our usual third co-host, Heather Upton, is off today celebrating the holiday in grand style, I hope.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're flying.
Yes.
What would that be? Duo.
Yeah. Not. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Anyway, we do this, and actually, we just went over this. You just told me which one you wanted to do, and I forgot to make a mark on this first page. Do you want to read the nice or the naughty?
I'll do the nice one first.
Okay. Yeah. So we're starting in when?
1905.
Okay.
So this is the earliest we can go back and find. Kind of local news. So our newspapers at the museum go back as far as, I believe, 1892. But back then, I guess there just wasn't a lot going on locally. So they were mostly sharing more of the, you know, regional, national, international news and letting people here know what was going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
But by 1905, we have enough juicy stuff happening in town that we have more local happenings in the papers.
What is the, do you know what the paper is?
I should have written that down. So I'm going to say most of these early ones are going to be from Northern Idaho News, I think is where all of those came from. Then once we get into the, I think it's the 40s, we start looking at the Sandpoint News Bulletin. Mm-hmm. And then the very last ones are going to be from the Bonner County Daily Bee.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So starting from probably the North Idaho News.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So our nice article from 1905 begins, "Good sleighing, fine weather with the thermometer but little below the freezing point. Everybody contented and happy and in good spirits marked the passing of Christmas Day Monday. In no previous season had Sandpoint merchants enjoyed so extensive a holiday trade. They put in large stocks, and that they had not misjudged the market was shown by the depleted condition of their holiday wares Tuesday morning. Saturday was marked by a throng of Christmas shoppers, and the stores were crowded. We never had so large a trade, was the general verdict of all the business houses. A big crowd came to town Saturday, and many of the men from the woods and surrounding towns remained over Sunday and Monday, giving the streets an animated appearance. There was plenty doing, and the saloons and restaurants did a thriving business. The churches took cognizance of the day with appropriate exercises. The Christmas Okay, the Christmas free exercises held at Methodist Church Saturday night were a grand success. After the program, of which the above is only a part," I skipped a bit here. Mm-hmm. There were notes on every single person who performed every single song. "The presents were distributed. There were 130 sacks of candy and nuts, but not near sufficient to supply all the children that were there, but all were pleased with the exercises. Had the committee known there would be such a jam, they would certainly have been better prepared. It was the largest crowd ever seen in the church."
That is, I just like the writing, style from 1905.
Uh-huh. It's so fun. And for the listeners, we are reading this in this kind of, screenshots from the newspaper. So it's this old timey font that's kind of hard to read. So if we stumble a bit, please forgive us.
Do you know the names of any of the paper writers from back in the day? There's no byline on this one.
I don't. At this point in time, mm-hmm. I did not see bylines on most of the articles up until I think the Sandpoint News Bulletin was doing it. Before then, there weren't really bylines mm-hmm. on these articles. In the 30s and 40s, you start to see Jim Parsons Sr. He was a big newspaper guy, especially over in Priest River. I don't know a lot of them off the top of my head, but the writing style is just fantastic. I love the kind of snarky comments you see sometimes too. Uh-huh. They should have been better prepared for the number of people that would come through. But at the same time, there have never been that many people there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We never had so large a trade was the general verdict of all the business houses. Uh-huh. Plenty doing, and the saloons and restaurants did a thriving business. That's great. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
I do like the detail. A big crowd came to town on Saturday. Many of the men from the woods and surrounding towns remained over Sunday and Monday. It puts a picture in your head of the kind of person who's coming to town for Christmas.
They have a barbershop set up at the edge mm-hmm. of town. They're like, you have to stop here and get a shave before you come in and socialize. Yes. Do you want to give us the naughtiest news of 1905?
Let's do it. Here we go. Here's what was happening in 1905. Cracksmen break in front of building, but get frightened and leave. A bold attempt was made Thursday morning to rob the Sandpoint Post Office. The burglars were undoubtedly frightened away by the presence of Night Officer McKenzie, who happened to be in the neighborhood of the post office at the time. The attempt was made sometime between the hours of 3:30 and 5 o'clock. As Officer McKenzie passed the post office at 3 o'clock, there had been nothing doing then. At 5 o'clock, he again passed and found where the men had broken the frame part under the plate glass, broken the frame part under the plate glass, making a hole just large enough to admit a man's body. After making an entrance in the building, it was easy to reach the safe, on which they placed a piece of soap, to which was attached glycerin, cap, and fuse. The fuse had not been lighted, as the men had become frightened before they got that far. The men thoroughly understood their work, and it was evident that no amateur did the work. As soon as Officer McKenzie found what had been done, he sent for Postmaster Wilson, who came hurriedly to the office. On looking around, he found the robbers had taken his watch, which was hanging in the office on a nail, and which he has owned for the past 10 years. There was very little value to the watch, but he prized it because he owned it so long. The officers have been looking ever since for traces to give them some clue, C-L-E-W, but so far have found nothing. If the burglars had succeeded in opening the safe, they would have secured $120 in money and about $1,000 in stamps, besides several papers valuable only to the government and Mr. Wilson. But they got spooked and ran away. And were not apprehended.
Well, yeah, and I'm a little curious what exactly frightened them, because mm-hmm. it sounds like Officer McKenzie passed by after they were already gone. It sounds mm-hmm. like they scared them, they were prepared to blow up the safe with their glycerin soap bomb.
Yes.
But then maybe they got scared that they would be injured in the process.
I guess.
Or that the sound would...
Well, sure, but Hannah, these were pros. These guys were...
It does say this was no amateur work.
No, these cracksmen knew what they were doing. So, I wonder, this post office in 1905, the post office would have been... Do you know where the post office would have been? It wouldn't be the old federal building.
Not yet. That was built in 1927.
Because I was going to say they would have seen a ghost if they had... been there, because we know that building's haunted.
Yeah, but. So that's a great mm-hmm. question. So back in the day, mm-hmm. before City Hall was built, that mm-hmm. was in 1911, they had this building called the Apple, they called it the Apple Box, and it was sort of the courtroom slash jail slash like police station slash fire station. I don't know if the post office was also in that building, but it was kind of the catch all government building at the time. So it might have been in that building.
Huh. Well, I would guess these were these guys came from out of town, stopped in Sandpoint, looked like a, you know, an easy pickings, and then something spooked him.
Yeah.
And they got only as far as getting the safe ready to blow when they departed.
Maybe the Christmas spirit came to them and they were like, maybe we shouldn't be breaking into the post office.
Yep.
At Christmas time.
Sounds like it. Yeah. Poor Postmaster Wilson, though.
Lost that watch that he'd had so long.
Yeah. Oh well.
Well, shall we skip ahead?
Let's move along.
Another decade. Yep. We'll go to 1915. And you want to tell us what nice things were happening then?
Sure. In 1915, although a stormy evening, the Methodist Church was filled by members and friends of that large Sunday school to witness the Christmas entertainment given last Friday evening. The program was a surprising one, as few, except the superintendent, knew just what was coming as it progressed, and even he was not aware of everything that was presented until it appeared. The primary department was well represented by both class and individual selections, as well as liberal gifts for the needy. Following the primary section of the school, the classes of the other departments were called, and each class responded with gifts as well as some verbal utterances, either in song or recitation in most cases. One or more potatoes served as individual admission tickets, and the total value of all gifts brought by various classes was over $40, $10 of the amount being in cash, which was given by Pastor Wells' class of men, in addition to a whole dressed hog valued at another $10. Mr. Wilson's class of young men gave 3 50-pound sacks of flour. These were the largest gifts, though all others were equally generous and worthy. The gifts were distributed to needy families in Sandpoint on Christmas Day, and no doubt served to aid and make more happy the recipients thereof. There were distributed to the younger members of the school well-filled sacks of candy and nuts, and to all 3 boxes of good-eating apples. The decorations consisted of 2 very nice Christmas trees, which were tastefully hung with bright tinsel and various ornaments, besides many wax candles. Decorations were in charge of the classes of Mr. Wilson and Mrs. Masters, with Mr. A.H. Moss as supervising chief. Well, it sounds like they really did a very nice job of decorating at the Methodist Church.
I hope Mr. Moss was supervising well if they had actual candles on the trees.
Real wax candles. It still blows my mind that people used to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, would just, here's a piece of kindling, basically. Yeah. Here's a dead tree.
Dried out tree.
I think it must have been, it would be safe, I guess, if the tree was really fresh.
And wet. I guess.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even so, you're just perching candles in the tree, hoping that they don't tip over as they melt. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like madness, but there you go.
I like how you know, we still see this type of thing happening with the food bank today, of these kind of community food drives all through the year, but especially around the holidays. And the idea of, like, bring your can of food as your entrance to this event. I love that we still see that today.
I love that. I love that it's very, very Idaho that one or more potatoes served as the admission ticket. I think that's a great, we should bring that tradition back.
Yep.
Bring a potato and you get into this event for free. And the well-dressed hog.
I'm curious how that was distributed.
Good question. Yes, but it sounds like they put on quite a show, and 3 boxes of good eating apples for everyone to enjoy as well. That's pretty good. Should we move on to naughty?
Sure. Okay. And in 1915, surprisingly, there weren't any crimes I could find. Okay. But this is one that I think everyone will sort of feel the naughtiness just because this is so relatable today. Something that you still get that kind of, you know, it's not a surprise, but it still feels like a surprise every year when you get this in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 1915. Taxes come in very slowly this year. Out of some 5,000 receipts that must be issued for the payment of taxes this year, there remains yet to be issued nearly 3,000, representing money to the amount of $200,000. This must be paid in during the next 3 days, or there will be a great many delinquent taxes. On all taxes not paid by January 1st, a penalty will attach. County Treasurer Christensen is dubious over the outlook, fearing that there will be many delinquencies. One thing is certain, and that is that it will strain the resources of his office to the utmost to handle this tremendous amount of work in the short time of 3 days if everyone decides to pay up. Oh, I just feel like this is, you know, it's taxes. It's the oldest thing in the world.
Yes.
Every year I'm like, I've got my little bundle of money set aside for Christmas presents. And then it's like, oh, right.
Mm-hmm.
We have taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So just thought everyone might appreciate that that's no new thing.
Okay. County Treasurer Christensen, dubious. Over the outlook.
I love how they're simultaneously scolding.
Yeah.
You know, like, you have to get your taxes in, but also but when you're going to overwhelm us.
It's going to be a pain for County Treasurer Christensen. So, yes. They can't win. All right. Some things never change.
Should we skip ahead?
Sure.
Another decade?
Yep.
Okay. This is the nice news from 1925. Hundreds of people in Sandpoint united in the efforts to spread Christmas cheer in the entire community. Four of the leading organizations of the town united in their efforts to see that no family was missed that needed especially to be remembered at this time. And if any family was missed, the regret will be very keen, for effort has been made to find all. The Merry Christmas included, in most cases, baskets of food, and the Civic Club and Martha Circle sent toys in some instances. 50 families were provided for in this way, besides the numberless cases that were looked after personally. Everywhere there was the Christmas spirit, the spirit to give, and it was the sincere wish that every gift fulfilled its mission of good cheer. Many features developed, as is always the case, and by another year, perhaps the work will have taken on a very definite and organized form and will promote greater goodwill among all concerned, for one of the greatest joys in giving is to share the privilege with someone else.
That's heartwarming.
Right, I know. Yeah. I thought this one was very sweet. And then you have the subtle comment of maybe next year it'll be more organized.
Yeah, maybe you'll get a little more organized next year. It'd be good.
Just a little nudge.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and in 1925, the naughty list is it's not bootlegging.
No, I thought for sure it would be, but I guess the bootleggers were, you know, they'd stocked everybody up for the holidays and they were taking a break for a week.
Yeah. Okay, here's a little, another kind of familiar tale. From 100 years ago, 1925, Sandpoint grows in the past year. 30 or more new homes have been erected and old places deep improved. Still, no houses for rent. Building activity in the past year and influx of new citizens make big holiday business. During the past year, there has been erected in Sandpoint 30 or more new homes, besides considerable remodeling of old homes. But even so, it is almost impossible to find a house for rent, which leads merchants to believe there will be the biggest holiday business this year of all the past years. In evidence of this, they point out the increased early Christmas business this year. That there are more people living in Sandpoint this year than last year is beyond dispute. For with the new building of the past summer, there still remains the problem of housing people. and houses for rent are almost as scarce as hen's teeth. During the height of the summer, building, it was frequently heard on the streets that this problem would be abated this winter, and there would be room enough to accommodate all who desire to live here. But when one starts out to find a house, they find another story. The building of all sections are represented. The building of this past summer has not been confined to one or two sections of the city, but all parts have received additions. From Milltown to the river, and from Sand Creek to the Great Northern Railway, the building has been going on. There is hardly a school in the entire district that is not overcrowded, and it is fast becoming imperative that new additions be built to some of the schoolhouses. At Dover, the situation especially keen, as, at present, some of the pupils are being brought to Sandpoint, some taught in the old school building and some in the community hall building. There you have it. Overcrowded and not enough houses in Sandpoint in 1925. And 100 years later,
Same story.
Yeah, you might find the word choice might be a little different, but I think you could read, similar. Although I guess I don't think it's quite the same in the school. I haven't heard of the schools being overcrowded, except...
I think some of them are
pretty
severely overcrowded.
Yeah, out in, and with Priest River, West Bonner County going through their kind of troubles. You're right.
Yeah. So.
Well, there you are.
Same challenges 100 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to get back on the nice train, let's jump forward another decade to 1935. What was going on then?
Let's see. So this is 35. So we're in, at least nationally, we're in the Depression at this time. Let's see what the news is. Firemen repair toys for needy is the headline. Over 300 children will be made happy tomorrow by gifts. Firemen at the City Hall have been playing Santa Claus for the past couple of weeks. And because of their efforts, over 300 children will be made happy on Christmas morning. An appeal for toys made through the bulletin resulted in receipt at the City Hall of hundreds of toys in various states of repair. Then the firemen got busy and, for the past fortnight, have been putting in all their time painting, repairing, and boxing up toys. Today, with the job practically finished, they are turning to the job of distributing the toys. Oh, they are turning the job of distributing the toys over to the Boy Scouts under the direction of Charles Stidwell. These boys are doing their part by taking the boxes to homes throughout the city and neighboring area where the toys will gladden the hearts of little boys and girls who otherwise might not be visited by Santa Claus on Christmas Eve. Well, that's cool.
We have some great photos in the museum collection of firemen repairing toys.
That's so neat.
Bring
the broken toys to the fire station.
Yeah.
Firemen will put them back together and then the Boy Scouts take them out. That's very cool.
Right. And it's perfect because the firemen are, just hanging out at the station when they're not cleaning fire trucks and responding to fires.
Yeah. Very neat. Okay. How about on the naughty list in 1935?
What have you got? No newspaper is complete without its letters to the editor. And so our sort of naughty news are more criticisms of the Christmas season in 1935. We have two letters to the editor that I thought were especially enjoyable. The first one is called Christmas Fatigue, and I think it'll be relatable. Unfortunately, with all the happiness of Christmas, there is such a thing as Christmas weariness. Some people place too many burdens on themselves by the long lists of people who they feel must be remembered. And these generous givers are apt to be such thoughtful folks that every gift, every card, has to be considered at length to make sure it is appropriate. Perhaps they get enough happiness to compensate them for their fatigue. If they find rewards through this excess of effort, who shall tell them to cut down that wonderful list that has so occupied their thoughts? Yet the Christmas rush should not be pushed so hard that one is ready to go to bed on Christmas morning. Better leave enough energy so you can do a little celebrating at New Year. There's just some like very wise person just putting this little kernel of wisdom out for all the overwhelmed.
And this is an unsigned note.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's just sort of a, you imagine they're thinking of somebody in particular, and it's just sort of,
unsaid.
Unsaid.
Uh-huh. And that's actually a good point. So at the top of this column, it says editorial. Mm-hmm. This may be a letter to the editor, or it may be from the editor of the paper.
I see. Yeah. Okay. So it could just be, Mm-hmm. Yeah. I imagine he or she has somebody in mind.
Probably. Like their mother or.
Exactly. Yeah. That would be my guess.
Uh-huh. Please calm down. Take a nap.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to be this big of a deal.
This is supposed to be fun.
Yeah. Uh-huh. The second one, which follows immediately below that, is titled Christmas Fires. No great celebration can be carried on without some misfortunes. So it is in the matter of fires at Christmas celebrations. Ah, here we go. The lighted candles on the tree have a flaming sparkle that makes the plainest room seem full of joy and beauty. But if someone opens the door and sends a blast of air throughout the room, and that wind blows the candle against a curtain, what then? If some child's flimsy dress is burned and the child screams with pain, that Christmas won't be very merry. Even Santa's whiskers are said to sometimes catch fire. Better watch those candles. Let us have Christmas fires, but let them be on the fireside hearth, where the dancing flames are well protected, or in the good old stove, which is cooking the most wonderful dinner that Father and the kids ever tasted.
Have you ever seen candles lit candles on a tree?
So growing up, so my family's very German, and this is the candles on the tree is a very German tradition. Mm-hmm. We would have candles, but they were not lit. They were just there.
Ah,
yes.
Okay.
And they have these little, like candle holders that sort of clip onto the branches so that the candles aren't just stuck in the
I've seen those like electric fake candles that you clip onto the tree. So it looks sort of like candles, I guess, but I don't know.
But I think that's, a good thing to have in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
Please stop. Over the last 10 years, they're like too many trees have caught fire.
Can we,
calm down.
Stop playing with fire, folks. Stop lighting candles and putting them on a tree inside of your home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where are we here?
We're up to 1945.
Okay. 1945. We are halfway through our program. Have we only had one crime so far? The cracksman at the post office?
Only one crime so far, but I imagine we'll have at least another one coming up.
Before we get there, we're going to pause for 2 minutes. I'm going to play a song that I heard, on Juke in the Back. Just the other night, I think, he was doing his holiday show, and, we'll play a song by the Youngsters called Christmas in Jail. Which is something fitting. And we'll be back in 2 minutes with more of the Community Character Hour right after this.
Christmas in jail, Christmas in jail. Had a little too much to drink. Ain't got no bail. Got no bail, and I'm spending New Year's Eve in the clink. I was in the wrong lane, feeling no pain. Souped my car to 75, ran right into you can guess who, and they say I'm lucky to be alive.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
They're singing down the street. While everybody's having Christmas turkey, they give me bread and water to eat. Christmas in jail, Christmas in jail. Wore my shoes out pacing the floor. Got rocks in my head, I wish I was dead. Ain't gonna drink and drive no more.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
They're singing down the street while everybody's having Christmas turkey. They give me bread and water to eat. Christmas in jail, Christmas in jail. Wore my shoes out pacing the floor. Got rocks in my head, I wish I was dead. Ain't gonna drink and drive no more. Ain't gonna drink and drive no more. Ain't gonna drink and drive no more. Merry Christmas!
The Youngsters with Christmas in Jail. You're listening to the Community Character Hour here on 88.5 KRFY. I'm Jake Peterson here with Hannah Combs, the Executive Director of the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum, wrapping up our 2025 season with a little news of the holiday season bulletins from years past. We've been moving through the decades. We just finished the 30s and now into 1945. You want to take the lead on this one with the nice story from 1945, Anna?
Absolutely. Okay. It says, Gay Christmas at County Poor Farm. Merchants make contributions in order to bring Yule cheer to old people. It was a gay Christmas for the 26 inmates at the County Poor Farm, all because of the friendly contributions made by the merchants of Sandpoint. Martin Bixel Jr., superintendent of the county institution, conceived the idea of making Christmas merry for the unfortunates, so he visited the merchants and told them of his plans to spread Yule cheer at the farm. A number of the merchants contributed, giving me candy, nuts, fruit, and cigars, everything for a fine Christmas. The 26 inmates, whose ages range from 52 to 85, were pleased with the treats and are grateful for the gifts from the merchants, said Bixel. The clothing and hardware stores made money contributions, which was spent for additional treats. The county could not afford to give the inmates much of a treat for Christmas, hence I am thankful for the support given by the merchants.
Huh. Well, that's nice of everybody to contribute. We had, how long was there a Bonner County poor farm?
Yeah, so I actually wrote an article for Sandpoint Magazine about the poor farm. Not this most recent issue that's out now, but the one that came out this past summer. And the poor farm is just one of my favorite things that was around in this area. So basically the idea was if someone was either older or incapacitated in some way or just had something going on where they couldn't really work or provide for themselves and they didn't have any family in the area to take care of them, the poor farm was a place where they could go and they could live there, they could eat there, and they did a number of little chores around the farm as they were able. You know, just like working in the vegetable garden, things like that. So it was a way that, and it was county funded. So it was a way that the community supported some of the people who just, you know, were a little bit older and couldn't necessarily take care of themselves that well so that they would have help. They also were really, really welcoming to people who were traveling on the trains at that time. So if someone was train hopping, it was kind of known that you could get off at the Great Northern Depot and then walk across just maybe 100 yards or so to the poor farm and get a hot meal before you hopped on another train.
So, yeah,
just a nice little thing before there were really, you know, like retirement homes or assisted living facilities. This was sort of what served that purpose in the community.
Wow. And then was, do you know when it closed? I guess this would have been, so 1945.
Yeah. This
is now we're getting so Social Security would have been a new thing, more or less.
And I think that definitely made a difference. Right. I can't recall off the top of my head. I think it was in the 60s when it closed down. And you can still see the ruins of that building on Gooby Road, which is really cool.
Really? Mm-hmm. Is that the, so that's the kind of ruined old brick building
Where, on the left-hand side.
Yeah, missing kind of that front. I have wondered what that building is many times.
Yeah.
Now I know.
It has a long history.
Huh. Cool.
So what was naughty that was happening in 1945? This is right at the end of World War II, so you would think most people were doing pretty well and pretty content at that point in time, but you never know.
Think again. The headline is Steal Two Clippers. Lawrence Rothenflew's barbershop was broken into sometime Sunday night, and two electric clippers were taken. It was reported to the sheriff's office Monday. Entrance was gained by breaking a back window. The loss was discovered Monday when the shop was reopened for business. Two clippers stolen.
Two electric clippers. This was kind of big technology back then.
I guess so, yeah.
And there was no note on whether they found the clipper thief.
Yeah. What would you do? I mean...
Like, why would you be stealing?
Break into a barber shop and take electric clippers, unless it's a rival barber.
I have theories. Yeah. Okay. I mean, either someone who, like, you know, couldn't afford the fancy electric haircut, and they really needed to get shaved up for a special occasion, and this was their way of making that happen. Or, yeah, I like the idea of a rival barber who just needs to get established with the best tools at hand. I think they might be caught out, though, if it was a rivalry situation.
It seems like there'd be, that new barbershop in town ended up with two new clippers, didn't they? suspicious. So, two electric clippers were taken at Christmas time. For shame. Well, okay. But that's what happened in 1945. What a very strange thing to break into a barbershop and take electric clippers.
They're like, we're going to do the serious crimes throughout the rest of the year, but at Christmas we'll do something that doesn't actually hurt anyone.
Yeah. There we go. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could pawn them, but there must be other places, you know, easier to find more pawnable things.
I think in a small town, you would get caught out for pawning something that was reported to be missing in the newspaper like this.
Yeah.
I do love, like, the great detail at which everything was reported in the newspapers at this time. You know, not just... I mean, they basically had entire pages that were just so-and-so went to so-and-so's house for dinner. So your social life was not private whatsoever. But you also, if someone stole clippers from the barbershop, everybody knew and was on the lookout.
Watch out for those. Yeah. If anyone tries to give you electric clippers for Christmas.
you know where they came from. Think twice.
Okay. On to the 50s?
Yeah, 1955. So this is only 70 years ago.
Local moose officers initiate class at PR, at Priest River, is the headline. Initiatory degree work was exemplified by a class of 9 candidates at Priest River on Sunday, December 16th, by the degree team from Sandpoint Lodge, 1437, Loyal Order of Moose. At this meeting, Leon Hoffine of Sandpoint was honored for his 25 years of membership in the LOOM and a 25-year club pin and moose head wristwatch. On the same day in Sandpoint, the annual Christmas party for children was held at the Moose Hall. The party, which was held at 3:30 o'clock in the afternoon, began with a program in which the children participated. At its close, Santa, Floyd Perks in parentheses, arrived on schedule and talked with the youngsters, presenting a candy cane to each. The children were so thrilled with Santa, he had difficulty in departing. Well, all right. Whatever happened to Moose Lodge 1437? I know there's the Eagles is still here. The Elks is still here.
There's still a lot of fraternal organizations operating in town. I am not aware of an active Moose Lodge.
Me neither.
It may be here, though.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to say. I do worry for the children of Sandpoint who could read the paper, though, that they're kind of putting the identity of Santa Claus in question here.
I know.
Mm-hmm. I think the newspaper editors maybe should have been a little bit more mindful of that.
I agree. Yeah. Well, okay. On to the naughty of 1955.
Yeah, I guess what I said earlier, you know, these were kind of good times. In the nation, but also we had our booming lumber industry here. Everybody was doing pretty well. Everybody was eating a lot of good food, and the good life kind of came with its own set of problems. I'm going to shorten this one because it's quite lengthy, but the headline is 33.7% of deaths in county attributed to diseases of the heart. New figures released by the U.S. Public Health Service on the principal causes of death in each part of the country show that coronary heart disease is the outstanding offender in Bonner County. It is less of a problem, however, than in most sections of the United States. According to the official report, 33.7% of all deaths among local residents are due to heart disease, and this is exclusive of deaths in the related cardiovascular system. Despite a massive research effort in laboratories and medical centers, heart disease seems to be growing as a menace. Certain patterns of its progress have been observed, but the causes are still a mystery. While these problems still defy solution, various theories have been advanced. One is that the high rate in the East, which is double that of some parts of the West, is due to the fattier diets indulged in the East. A close connection has been established between the intake of animal fats and the incidence of heart disease. So I think it's one of those things. I assume that people of the past have the same medical understanding that we do sometimes. And then you look back and it's like, oh, heart disease is something that was totally a mystery at this point in time. But they were starting to realize that it was a big problem.
Perhaps your diet would have an effect. That is very interesting.
And it was probably one of the first kind of decades in history where people were eating rich enough foods often enough that this was really becoming a problem.
Yeah. It's also, I mean, right at the beginning there, the U.S. Public Health Service is the source of this information, 1955.
Mm-hmm.
Reading back a few decades. I don't know when the Public Health Service was, you know, was actually founded, but like it's not something that you would have probably seen in a paper from 20 years earlier.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
You know, it wasn't until, you start to feel like you're getting into the modern era as when you start to see these, figures quoted from.
Medical studies and I mean, earlier on, we should do a whole show on just the kind of snake oil medicines that were sold back in the day. There was not much scientific rigor put forth in a few decades earlier.
Hey, but it was lower in Bonner County than nationwide, even though it was still quite high.
The highest cause of death, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see here. We are on to, should we move on to 1965?
Yeah. Okay, 1965 had some good stories. So I pulled two nice and two naughty stories for this decade. The first one is wonderful, but kind of the newsprint's kind of hard to read. So bear with me. I'm going to do my best reading this one. The headline is Storybook Wedding Unites Couple After the Ross Halls Assist Cupid. Members and friends of the community theater are invited to attend and meet the young couple who were married in almost a fairy tale wedding ceremony on Sunday, December 20th, at the home of Mr. and Mrs. Ross Hall on Lakeview Boulevard. Earlier in the afternoon, the Halls opened their door to find the sad-looking couple who had made the long trip to Whitefish, Montana to be married, only to find that the courthouse had closed on Thursday in observance of the holidays. They had decided they had no alternative but to drive on to Coeur d'Alene to be married. Quickly inviting them into their home, the Halls said, "Let's see what can be done in Sandpoint." They phoned Bonner County Auditor Doris Kenny, who opened her office and issued the marriage license. Reverend Clarence Twigg of the First Presbyterian Church was contacted and arrived to counsel the couple. At 5 o'clock, Reverend Twigg was standing framed in the large picture window of the Hall home, waiting for the couple to recite their vows. The house was in candlelight, and the altar was a spotlighted pine tree just outside the window, with the large white snowflake swirling gently around it. Married were Jeanette Allen, daughter of Mr. and Mrs. J.D. Bottoms of Hawaii, and Robin Ducrest of San Francisco. His parents are Mr. and Mrs. Paul Lewis of Orleans, France. The bride wore a stunning floor-length gown of champagne brocade trimmed in white fur and carried a bouquet of white roses centered by an orchid. Attendants to the couple were Mr. and Mrs. Philip Johnson of Spokane. Mr. Johnson sang "Because," preceding the ceremony. Mr. and Mrs. Ducrest are both graduates of San Francisco State College with degrees in drama and music. They met last summer at Big Mountain Playhouse at Whitefish, Montana, where both were members of the Little Theater Group and had planned to be married in the Montana town. The couple had spent several days visiting in Sandpoint and had made many friends who were quickly summoned to witness the ceremony and provide the wedding supper. Mrs. Hazel LeMoreau, president of the Sandpoint Community Theater and Academy, invites all interested persons to attend the reception and meet the couple who plan to be instrumental in establishing little theater activities in Sandpoint this coming summer. Mrs. LeMoreau stated that the recreational facility will help the Sandpoint economy by drawing tourist trade as well as providing enjoyment for the local residents.
I love this story.
Yeah, me too.
That's great. Okay.
I love that they're just wandering around. They're not even from here at all.
Yeah.
Like from San Francisco.
No.
From France.
Yeah. No, it sounds, I mean, as written, yeah, it just sounds like they're like walking the streets of town and
trying to find someone to marry them.
And luckily, Mr. and Mrs. Ross Hall of Lakeview Boulevard are
Take them in.
Yeah.
Like, we can make this happen. And they were connected. So they pulled a few favors, I think, to make this happen for them.
Right. Yeah. Ross Hall and Hazel. Mm-hmm. He was a well-known photographer and a prominent local citizen.
Yes.
Yeah. Huh.
Definitely.
That's pretty cool.
I do love that, like, you know, once you come to Sandpoint, there's kind of no escaping Sandpoint. They're like, we'll throw your wedding celebration, but you're going to start a theater school next summer.
Starting the community theater. Let's see. So they were Ducrest,
it'd be fun to know if they're.
I would like to know. Yeah, what happened to them?
Yeah,
did they?
I'll have to look them up.
Stick around, Mr. and Mrs. Ducrest.
Yeah,
both graduates of San Francisco State College. This is cool. Yeah, also cool to think. I mean, this could have happened in, like, you know, the '20s. It sounds like, but it's kind of cool to think of it as. So this is the mid 1960s, 1965.
Mm-hmm. You still have the pitch-in wedding happening. I love that.
And coming from San Francisco in 65, so right before the Summer of Love and everything, a couple years before.
What other good news was happening? I think you might get to sing a song for this one. Yeah. Oh, wait. It's a poem. Okay. There you go.
JC Christmas Tree Pickup on Sunday is the headline. The annual Sandpoint JC's Christmas Tree Pickup will be held Sunday, January 2nd, beginning at 8 a.m., according to a spokesman for the group, who asks that trees be stacked on street corners under the streetlights. The following poem, author unknown, accompanied the announcement. Christmas Tree Cleanup, the title of the poem. When the cheery warmth of Christmas season cools with passing days, and the Christmas tree has lost the charm it held through holidays, when the ornaments and tinsel are packed and stored away, don't throw that tree aside to dry and burn some later day. Just take it to the corner, and the JC trucks will come and haul them all away to where they won't be troublesome.
I love that.
That's a
so
lovely
much.
Poem. Yes.
And nice. I'm not positive. I think this was happening at that point in time, but have you heard of the big Christmas tree bonfire they used to have at City Beach back
no,
in the day?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a big thing for a while. I think the EPA eventually shut it down because of the impacts to the water quality, is my understanding. Perhaps
wow.
That's a story for another day as well.
Okay. Wow, that's very interesting. That okay. Yeah, I always burn. Well, I live out in the county technically, so I don't even have the option to have my tree picked up by the city, but I always burn it sometime in January, February. Have a little kind of mini celebration. It is time. Let's see. So I read that. We have more from 1965.
We do, yes.
The swinging 60s.
No holiday is complete without a little bit of holiday scolding.
Yeah.
Our next headline is aid snowplowers, don't leave cars on roads.
Okay.
Don't leave your cars in, quote, cold storage on the streets, county or state highways, representative officials warned this week. Snow plowing can't be done properly with cars permanently parked in the path of the snowplows. Floyd Perks, that guy who's Santa.
He's, yeah.
City Superintendent of Public Works said owners of cars parked on unplowed streets should, quote, put them in the yard or anywhere so the streets can be plowed. If cars are not moved, Perks added, we'll try to contact the owner to find out what garage he wants to tow his car because they must be moved. It's getting to be a real problem with the snow season just commencing. The sheriff's office, county commissioners, and state police said a similar problem exists now in county and state ways. State policeman Harvey Riffle said the fish hatchery road south of the bridge was one of the worst thoroughfares to plow because of cars standing alongside the road. Commissioners said the county would not be responsible to damage done by plows to cars parked on the highway. The consensus was vehicles must be moved from the road, streets, or highways.
That is... Okay.
I think things have changed a little bit in this regard. We now have stern signs saying that you cannot park there. They aren't just going to, you know, bump your car out of the way with the plow like they threatened to do back in 65.
Uh-huh. And Floyd Perks seems to have lost all of his Christmas spirit from merely a decade earlier.
Exactly.
If cars are not moved,
he's over it.
We'll try to contact the owner to find out what garage he wants to tow his car because they must be removed.
He's been working in the
it's been a long 10 years in the public works department. Yep. Okay. Here we are. Some more rough news from 1965. Some trouble and excellent skiing follows the snowfall. That's the headline. Scattered trouble came in the wake of the heavy snowfall during the past few days in the county. Only skiers had no complaints. Al Peterson, manager of the Pacific Power and Light Company, describes the snowfall as intense. We don't usually get so much at one time, he said, pointing out, however, that power outages were scattered. William T. Nordine, manager of Northern Lights Incorporated, said scattered outages also plagued his company's distribution lines. The General Telephone Company reported that the heavy snow of the past few days created outages, but not as bad as the first light snow. Crews were now working in rural areas, mopping up, and everyone available was working on communication breakdowns caused by the snow. City, county, and state road departments were plowing and grading on a 24-hour schedule. The sheriff's office reported the roads plowed from Sandpoint to Coeur d'Alene. Approximately 21 inches of snow covered the ground as of Monday evening. Tom Brackney, supervisor of U of I extension, U of I experiment station on North Boyer said. Snow on the Schweitzer ski basin area was reported settling Tuesday following a fall of 18 inches of new snow the day before on a 5-foot base at lodge elevation. The temperature on Tuesday was 30 degrees above, and skiing was described as excellent. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of snow.
It is, but I'm kind of surprised that they're making such a big deal out of 21 inches. I don't know. I guess I thought that that was kind of normal back then.
The 21 inches, it's hard to say is that that's total. That's how much there was at that time. That's a good chunk of snow. I mean, that's a good, that's not.
It's a lot to get at
once. Yeah, I mean, that's. Yeah, we're not talking about the snow banks. That's like, what is that, up to your knees or so?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just in loose snow on the ground. That's cool.
Do we have time to do our last one?
Let's do it. Let's race through it. Here we go.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Okay. That ties in perfectly to our last article.
All right. 1975, on Toys for Tots. The distribution process of the Sandpoint Lions Club's Toys for Tots program will be completed today, culminating what has become the greatest effort on the part of area residents and Lions Club and the Lions Club in bringing a joyful Christmas to those who might otherwise be without it. At least 89 families throughout the area are benefited from the program this year. Recipient families include nearly 270 children. They received food, clothing certificates, and toys, both new and reconditioned, which made available through the donations of money, food, and repairable toys by individuals, organizations, and businesses. The contributions amount to an estimated $3,000 in toys, over $2,800 in clothing certificates, and an untold amount of food. That should say quite a bit for the caliber of people living in this area. Where else in an area that has its share of economic difficulties can the people be found who are willing to share with those who have become the hardest hit victims of a troubled economy? And certainly, it took an established organization such as the Lions Club to offer the needed direction and time involved with such an effort. As a result, it's going to be a very good Christmas this year, a well-deserved one for everyone involved at that. The byline at the end, just WS. Do we know who that is?
I think this was a letter to the editor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. WS signs that one. That's very nice.
Yeah, the Lions Club, they're still at it today.
They sure are.
Yep.
Over right in your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Next to the museum.
Our neighbors over there.
Let me just identify our station here. This is 88.5 KRFY Ponderay. You're listening to the Community Character Hour. We're just about at the end of our time together here, but we have enough time for one more.
All right.
Yeah, go ahead.
So in 1975, I couldn't find anything naughty happening here locally, but I found this fantastic article just to give you a flavor of what was happening in the world at large at that point in time.
This was picked up by the
Bee? This was picked up by the Bee,
okay.
But it's a story coming out of California.
Okay.
That I'm sure everyone here would have found very thrilling. Okay. Major corporations, fearing increased kidnap attempts on their top executives in the United States and abroad, are sending company chauffeurs to a race driving school to learn escape techniques. The anti-kidnapping course, 3 days for $412.50, is offered by former international race driver Bob Bondurant at his school 40 miles north of San Francisco. It all began 1.5 years ago when a major international oil company got worried after an American executive and his chauffeur were kidnapped and murdered in South America, said Bondurant, 42, a native of Evanston, Illinois. The oil company contacted me at my school for high-performance driving. They wanted to have a little life insurance by having their drivers prepared just in case. We taught the chauffeur of the chairman of the board. Since then, about 75 chauffeurs employed by big corporations or wealthy individuals have taken the course. Bondurant sends the employers written evaluations of their drivers, and some chauffeurs have been replaced. The corporations now realize a chauffeur can save the lives of their people, he said. Bondurant, a stocky, dark-haired man who was brought up in Westwood, California, is proud that no one has been injured in the anti-terrorist course, and most pleased when one of his students escapes simulated pursuit in the final test. That test takes place at night and is a high-speed chase in which Bondurant's instructors pursue the student chauffeur around the hilly tracks at Sears Point International Raceway, where the school is located. One night, says Bondurant, one of our students crested the top of a hill during the chase, and then as he went down the other side, he turned off his lights trying to escape, did a 180-degree turn, pulled off into the grass, and my instructor went by and didn't even see him. I felt proud. Bondurant started his school 7.5 years ago, and until the anti-kidnapping course, he concentrated mainly on training race drivers, people who drive sports cars, and others who just wanted to improve their highway ability. The corporate chauffeur's course, as he calls the 3-day anti-hijacking session, combines elements of all these classes. There's police-style pursuit, racing, and stunt driving. We teach skid control, high-speed cornering technique, and sharp braking, he said. Then we put the drivers through chases and maneuvers with obstacles. The chauffeurs use their corporation cars, mostly Cadillac limousines, and are put through front, rear, and four-wheel lockups, 180 and 360-degree turns, recovery drills, and an oil-slicked skid area. It's not the kind of thing a chauffeur would do, unless he's trying to save his boss's life, said Bondurant.
Wow.
I just love that that was the big Christmas 70s. News.
Yeah.
In the 70s.
Okay, mm-hmm. An anti-kidnapping driving course.
Yeah.
For chauffeurs of executives of multinational corporations.
I don't know if it's, like when you're applying to be a chauffeur, I imagine there are some guys who've been chauffeuring for like 40 years and they're like, wait, I have to do this now.
Yeah.
And then there are some guys who are like, I want to be a chauffeur. They get to be stunt drivers.
It's, yeah. Is it, yeah, I wonder how that course, I mean, do you think he's still out there? Teaching this course to chauffeurs on how to escape in
sure
a limousine.
Hope so.
I hope so.
I just love that they have to do all of this in a big old heavy limousine.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Well, Hannah, it's after 9 o'clock. We got to make way for Bird Note and so forth. Is there anything you want to call to our attention about the museum in the?
Just that we're putting together an exciting calendar of events for 2026. So go to our website, bonnercountyhistory.org, for information about upcoming events. We're also doing our end of year fundraiser. So if you enjoy this program, you can help support it by supporting the museum. And again, you can visit our website at bonnercountyhistory.org to do that.
Okay. Well, with that, I think we're going to turn it over to Bird Note and Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long after that. If you're listening to this show live on Monday, December 22nd, then just a couple of programming notes. I'll mention that there will be a morning show tomorrow, Tuesday, but there will be no new morning show on Christmas Eve or on Christmas Day or a news show on Friday either. We're taking a little holiday break. Of course, it won't be dead air. We'll be playing music and other things during those hours. And then we'll be back next week again, because of the New Year holiday, there's going to be some changes in the programming as well. But we'll be back on January 2nd with the great big news wrap-up of 2025 and a look ahead at 2026. For an hour with hopefully some local reporters and editors of the paper and so forth. So tune in for that. On Christmas Eve, you can join us at 4 o'clock. Christmas Carl's coming in to take over the airwaves. At 6 o'clock, we're rerunning again the KRFY Holiday Spectacular at 6 o'clock on December 24th, Christmas Eve. And then that goes right into this week's Know Your States, Know Your Community with Connecticut and Delaware. And after that, there's a special tributes at 9 o'clock on Christmas Eve as well. So a lot of original holiday programming coming your way from KRFY. Thank you very much. Hey, give us a call if you want a t-shirt, by the way. We have t-shirts available in all sizes now. People have, we finally restocked our t-shirt supply. We were down to just the smalls and the extra smalls for, I think, several years. And then we're back. So you can get a t-shirt just in time for the holidays. All right. Hannah Combs, Executive Director of the Bonner County Historical Society Museum. Thanks very much.
Happy to be here.